Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Laurie. And happy Sunday evening, everyone else. Maybe if you're on the West Coast, we could still stay afternoon. Happy afternoon. I consider evening starting at 5. It's kind of the way I was trained in Kansas. And here in Colorado, it just turned 5. So it's just turned evening here. Of course, even those kind of things, we all were taught different things, right? For some people, I know 5 is still, they consider 5 still afternoon. So even the imagined rules of when afternoon turns to evening are just made up. What I'm going to do is just play a song first, just as an opportunity to be still. And because this is December, it's the only month of the year that I play songs from my holiday playlist. So that's what I'm enjoying. So that's what I'm going to play. This is a Bob Dylan holiday song. I'm sure you guys have heard of it before. It's called Little Drummer Boy.
I find his keeps swimming far up upon to lay before the king far up upon and so to honor him far up upon. It's fit to give a king a
We are here for the 7 steps to awakening. And last week I shared a little bit from quote 687. I shared 687A and 687B, and then we got to 687C, and that was a little long and we were out of time. So I knew that we would need to come back and start there again. So what I'm going to do this evening is I'm going to, of course, re-quote 687 again from the Yoga Vasistha. And I will read 687A and 687B again, kind of as a review. But we'll get into 687C as soon as possible because that's really, you could say, the new material for tonight. So this is the link to 687A. And this is what 687 says in the Seven Steps to Awakening. In the twinkling of an eye, this little ripple known as the mind assumes terrible proportions. Man foolishly ascribes to the true self the sorrow and the sufferings that do not touch it in the least, and becomes miserable. Man foolishly ascribes to the true self the sorrow and the sufferings that do not touch it in the least, and becomes miserable. And I'll just say that tonight, because I don't think this has been true before just now, tonight when I read this second sentence from 687, I see two interpretations simultaneously, both of which I think are correct. So I will share both of those. The first one I kind of think I remember sharing last week. I think I remember talking last week about noticing our attention. For example, if you have a really good speaker, I'm going to stop speaking in a moment. You might be able to hear the heater behind me, because right now I'm temporarily kind of in a hallway in my house, and the closet with the broiler is right behind me, and the heat just came on. So if you listen, you might be able to hear the buzz of that heating system. I don't know if you could hear it or not, but if you could, you know, you're able to put your attention on that. And, of course, assuming everyone here can see the screen, Lori says, no problem, she can hear it. Assuming everybody here can see the screen, you can see what Lori has put in the room. We see a little Christmas tree. We see a star. We see an angel. Oh, and if you look at the angel, notice how cute she is with her little wings and her little blue halo. And now maybe just place your attention on your hands. You know, how do your hands feel right now? Are your hands warm? Are your hands cold? What about your toes? How do they feel? What about your bum-bum? How does your bum-bum feel against the seat that you're sitting on? Is the seat soft? Is it hard? I'm assuming the dry is for the hands and not the bum bum. But I hope your bum bum's dry too, Kathy. But what I want to point out is that how our attention can go in different directions. You know, like Lori says she wasn't noticing the heat, the sound of the heat behind me, until I brought the attention to it. And you may not have been noticing how your hands or your feet or your bum bum felt until I brought your attention to it. Let me ask you this question. Can you separate attention and awareness? Is attention something different than awareness? Or is attention awareness? Is it just another name that we give awareness? As far as I can tell so far, it's just awareness. I can't really find a difference between attention and awareness. I can find when attention is relaxed, there's a general awareness. And I can find that when attention is, you know, somehow it's like contracted and, let's say, like shot into thoughts, it's really absorbed in thought. And I don't seem to be aware of the things around me, like the ticking of the clock or the heater or stuff. So I have a very focused attention. But as far as I can tell, it still all feels like awareness to me. I can't notice attention as something different. Maybe at best I would call it a mechanism of awareness. And says, I am aware that I am putting my attention on my hands, etc. Yeah. So when this quote says, man foolishly ascribes to the true self the sorrow and the sufferings that do not touch it in the least, one interpretation that I hear of that is that as I take my attention and I focus it on my, oh, woe is me thoughts, for example, my victim thoughts, why doesn't anybody like me, or why doesn't anybody care about me, or why doesn't anybody pay attention to me? When I do that, when I place my attention so deeply into my thoughts, I am foolishly ascribing to the true self the sorrow and the sufferings that do not touch it in the least. The attention, the awareness remain untouched. They are not at all affected by the thoughts. But because the attention is so absorbed in the thoughts, I create a false me and believe that I am suffering. That is, you know, foolishly ascribing to the true self the sorrow and the sufferings that do not touch it by putting my attention on those thoughts so deeply. But another interpretation that just came to me is when we still have that idea of a separate God, which I know even some people who come to this room still have that idea. You know, some of you may have let that go, but I know still have that idea of a separate God. And when something happens, for example, a loved one dies, a loved one gets cancer, a child in the family gets cancer, you know, there's still this thought of, why would God do that? As if God is something separate. Why would God do that? And those types of ideas that God is responsible, that there is an external God that does not love us enough and is responsible for the sorrow and suffering in the world is another way that I think maybe this second sentence could be understood. And then even a third way has just come. Those who believe that God is suffering, that God looks down on the world and sees the things that we do to one another as humans, how cruel we can be with one another, and that God somehow is suffering, and that God may even be angry and judge us, right? And that God could have a grievance against us, that God could not love us because of how evil we are. That's another way of foolishly ascribing to the self the sorrow and the sufferings that do not touch it in the least. So it seems like we have a lot of ways of doing this, all of which are false. But we have a lot of ways of doing this. Now the first sentence again says, in the twinkling of an eye, this little ripple known as the mind assumes terrible proportions. And right now I'm hearing two interpretations of that as well. One interpretation, which I believe I covered last week, was, you know, I could be happy, la, 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 you know, going about my business, la, 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 la. And then somebody says, oh, my God, Regina, you are just so stupid. And instantly, boom, I buy into that thought. All of my guilt, my unworthiness, or my anger, my hatred, however I react, comes up. And in a nanosecond, I went from la, 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 la to extremely upset, right? So this little ripple known as the mind assumes terrible proportions in the twinkling of an eye. But also, if you look at the world, I mean, the world, in effect, we could call the world. The world is projection of mind in the language of the Course, a reflection of mind in the language of NTI. But the world is mind. I was talking to my boyfriend yesterday about how a year or two ago, I don't remember how long ago, but there was never anything really on the news. You turn the news on and they were either talking about what was happening in the lives of movie stars or they were talking about maybe some murder trial. But there was not big national news, and now there's, or international news, and now there seems to be lots of big national news, lots of big international news. It's like, the world itself has assumed terrible proportions, right? But that is mind. You know, that is mind. This crazy, crazy world that we're seeing right now, which seems to be getting crazier every day right now, that is mind. It went from, at least from the point of view of Americans, now of course this isn't true from the point of view of everyone in the world, but from the point of view of Americans, it went from not much happening a couple years ago to a lot of stuff happening, maybe a lot of stuff for people to be concerned about, afraid about, trying to figure out how to solve. So in the twinkling of an eye, this little ripple known as the mind assumes terrible proportions. Man foolishly ascribes to the self the sorrow and the sufferings that do not touch it in the least and becomes miserable. All right, so let's go look, just a quick review of 687A, 687B, and then we'll get to 687C. Did I post 687A? I did. Okay, good. 687A. If you let in one thought that comes to reinforce ego, ego is reinforced. More thoughts will follow, each stronger than the first. Attention is pulled in by belief once interest has been given. Although one's thoughts appear interesting, it is most helpful to stay in touch with one's true interest. When one remembers the interest and calling of the heart, especially when one remembers this interest and calling with the heart, mind's thoughts do not hold as much interest. And I can't remember what it was or even when it was. It was yesterday or today. Some story tried to take hold in my mind. I've already forgotten what the story was, but there was a first thought. You know, like, oh, she doesn't like me. And I don't think that was it. I don't remember at all what it was. But, you know, that's a first thought. Oh, she doesn't like me. And I remember very clearly when whatever that first thought was came into the mind, very clearly the next thought that I heard was, let go of this right here at the first thought. And I did. And, in fact, I let go of it so completely that I couldn't even begin to tell you what it was. But this is something that I have trained myself to do. I have learned that if a story starts coming in that is obviously just an ego story, you know, just, you know, it's just trying to start trouble. That's all it's doing. It's trying to start trouble. To let go of it with the very first thought. It's much, much easier to let go with the first thought. If I listen to the story for a little while, it's harder to let go of. It seems it's more attached. And, of course, if I listen to it for days or weeks or years, it's even harder to let go of. The easiest place to let go of an ego story is with the first thought. And so that's what I like to do. That's how I like to let go. The very first thought, have no interest. And what helps us do that is what the rest of this 687A talks about, keeping our attention with our true desire. The more you keep your attention with your true desire, the easier it is to let go of anything the mind is trying to do to bring you into an ego preservation strategy. Yeah, a story that's going to preserve the ego or some kind of thought that's going to preserve the ego. It's much easier to let go if you keep your desire on truth, you know, whether you call that the desire for awakening or the desire to know truth or desire to be only love, whatever you call that. If you keep your desire on truth, it's much easier to let go. If you let your desire slip to something else, it's harder to let go of a story with the first thought. For example, let's imagine that I want everyone to like me. You know, let's imagine I let my desire slip to wanting to be well-liked. If I let my desire slip to wanting to be well-liked, then as soon as the ego says, oh, she doesn't like you, oh, I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen now because now the ego is telling a story that's of interest to me because I want to be well-liked. And the ego is now going to tell me all about somebody who doesn't like me, and it might even have ideas about what I can do, how I can behave differently, you know, to get this person to like me, or how I can at least talk bad about this person to other people so that they don't believe her and, you know, draw lines, you know, they're on my side instead of her. So, you know, whatever the ego is going to do, I'm going to have interest in it if my desire has slipped there, if my desire has slipped to wanting to be financial, you know, feel financially secure, whatever that means for me. As soon as the ego starts telling stories about finances, I'm going to be interested. You know, if I want to be physically beautiful, and whatever that idea is to me, as soon as the ego starts telling stories about how to be physically beautiful, or why I'm not physically beautiful, or whether people think I am or am not physically beautiful, you know, I'm going to be listening to those. But if I keep my desire focused on truth, it's a lot easier to recognize an ego story and let it go at the first thought. You could say, and you would be right, I think, that we tend to follow our desire. We follow our desire. So by keeping our desire pure, it is easier not to get entangled in the ego's preservation stories. All right, so I'm going to move on to 687B. 687B says, when I forget my true self and become interested in the mind's thoughts, I experience the effects of that interest. So if I forget myself and I forget my true desire and I start thinking that I want to be well liked by everyone, and then my mind starts telling me a story about, oh, somebody, you know, she doesn't like you, and I listen, right, because I follow my desire, so I start listening to that story, I am going to then experience the effects of that interest, whether I feel unworthiness, insecurity, some kind of desperation, anger, whatever I feel. The reason the emotion came is because I gave my attention to the story. And so I then feel the effects of where my interest went. Of course, if I'm keeping my mind with my true desire and a story starts to be told in the mind, oh, she doesn't like you, and then, you know, the thought comes, come on, let go of this right here at the very first line, and I do, well, then I just go right on with my la, 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 right? I don't feel any effects of the story because I didn't give it any interest. I get to feel my natural state, which is happiness. Our natural state is happiness, joy, love, compassion, peace. These are very natural for us. This is our natural way of being. And so if I don't buy into any ego stories, then this is the only thing I feel. If I feel anything else, that does mean I've bought into an ego story. That's what that means. So if my interest goes to an ego story, I feel the effects of that story. All right, let's go on to 687C then. That was all review from last week. So 687, I think a few weeks ago I talked about some of the purposes of contemplation during the seven steps, and there are a few really good purposes of contemplation, but one of them is looking at yourself with honesty, because looking at yourself with honesty is very, very important, not with judgment, not with guilt, but with awareness, honesty. And so this is what 687C is. This was me looking at myself with honesty. This is what I saw on this day, January 12, 2013. Of course, asking the same questions today, I might get the same answer. I might get a different answer. But let's look at what I got that day. So the question I asked, because we're looking at how attention goes into mind, So the question I asked was, how does the mind suck me in? So this is a question of looking, where am I not letting go at the first line? You know, for example, if I want to be well-liked, right, then as soon as the ego starts telling stories that are related to that, I'm sucked in. So what I'm asking is, how am I today still sucked in? Cassie says, let me count the ways. Yeah, and probably, you know, I think sometimes too, since Cassie said that, I will say this. One thing when you are writing with inner wisdom, you know, if there are 50 ways that you're sucked in right now, inner wisdom may not bring all 50 of those ways to mind, because that would be too many things for you to, you know, really give your attention to and focus on. So wisdom might bring one thing to mind, or two, or three, you know, a little bit so that you can pay attention. It's not going to create this long, long laundry list because you wouldn't be able to give your attention, or at least most of us would not be able to give our attention to so many things at once in order for it to be healed or transcended. So on this day, there were three. I'm not saying these were the only three, but this is what awareness came to for me. How does the mind suck me in? Number one, thinking I need things a certain way. Number two, thinking I need to be perceived in a certain way. And number three, thinking I need a certain experience. One thing that's interesting is how all three of these start with thinking I need. You know, that means in order to be happy, in order to feel safe, right, in order to feel secure, I think I need these things. And so the three things I thought I needed was, again, just for things in general to be a certain way. And I don't remember specifically what I needed a certain way on January 12, 2013. But right now I live alone, which is really funny, but because almost ever since I've been on the spiritual path, starting about a year or two after I was on the spiritual path, I've had different people either staying with me or living with me. So I've had lots and lots of people in and out of my house. And, you know, other people do things different than me, right? The only person that really does things just like me is Jasmine, and that's because I raised her, I trained her. Everybody else does things different than me. You know, the way that they do dishes, the way they did the dishes in the cabinets, you know, just, you know, you just name it, just everything, right? And so because I've had so many people staying with me or living with me, one of the things I would notice is that I got, you know, to some degree upset, all the way to pure hatred with Laurent, to minor annoyance and frustration with Danielle. By the time Danielle was here, I was much more healed. But when things weren't the way I thought I needed them, you know, I need things done a certain way, right? Or maybe as the president minister of Awakening Together, working with volunteers to get some things done, maybe sometimes, you know, things aren't done the way I want them done, or they aren't done as quickly as I want them done, or whatever. So whenever I think I need things done a certain way in order to be happy, then as soon as the mind starts telling me a story that somebody's doing something a different way, my interest is there. And so one of the things that I was really noticing on this day was that was still a weakness of mine. There were still at least some things, certainly not all things, and definitely less things than once upon a time, but yet there still were things I needed done a certain way. And when he started talking about those things, I got sucked in. Another is thinking I needed to be perceived in a certain way. You know, as far as the well-liked thing, I mean, I don't know exactly when that fell away from me, but it hasn't, you know, it hasn't been that awful long. I would say, you know, probably in the last 6 months or so, I've definitely noticed that, you know, when people appear not to like me, it's okay. It's really okay. I'm not at all upset inside, nor do I have any grievance or any, you know, bad ill feelings towards them. It's just totally okay. But I think that's fairly new with me. I mean, I think it's been happening in a way. It's been happening in a way, kind of gradually. But to have it just completely fall away, how other people feel about me, is fairly new. So this was definitely something that was still going on with me in January 12, 2013. I wanted to be perceived maybe as caring, right? I wanted to be perceived as caring. I probably wanted to be perceived as guided, right? I wanted to be perceived as having guidance. I wanted to be perceived, I don't remember what else. I know these are a couple different things that I've had before. So if I start, if I want these things, and then again, ego starts telling me a story where I'm not getting what I want, my interest is going to get sucked in. And then the other is thinking I need a certain experience. Maybe as we read more, we'll know. I'm trying to remember what that certain experience would have been, and I don't know. So we'll see as we go on. Right now, I don't think I need a certain experience. I will tell you one type of experience I used to think that I needed. I thought I needed to feel peace. And if I didn't feel peace, it meant that I was guilty once upon a time. And I'm sure some of you guys have felt that too. I needed to feel peace. And if I didn't feel peace, it meant that I was guilty. That's not true anymore. I do feel peace most of the time. I don't feel peace 100% of the time. And when I don't feel peace, all that means to me now is that I need to relax. I need to take a breath, step back, let go, you know. And as far as is, you know, yeah, so there's no judgment against not feeling peace. It's just kind of a wake up call. Nor do I judge others if they get upset as well. You know, I understand, you know, that's okay. You know, upset happens. You know, if we get sucked into a thought, we sometimes get upset, and some of us wake up a little faster from that. Some of us wake up a little slower from that. But the same thing is happening in all cases. We just, our attention got sucked into a thought, and so we were feeling the effects of the thought that our attention got sucked into, right? So three things I found on this day that my mind would start, I would start listening to mind. I would really start listening to mind, you know, if it started talking about any of these three things. Thinking I need things a certain way. Thinking I need to be perceived in a certain way. Thinking I need a certain experience. All right, so I'm going to keep reading now from the journal. When I think I need things a certain way, what is the most common effect? And what I saw then was annoyance. Again, earlier, it would have been out-and-out hatred. When I was with Laurent and I thought I needed things a certain way, sometimes I didn't feel annoyance. I felt just pure hatred. By the time I got to January 12, 2013, I was feeling annoyance. And one thing that I've noticed on my spiritual path, I don't know if this is true for everyone, but I've noticed that a mild annoyance or a mild frustration can be overlooked easily if we don't really want to see and bring our awareness to everything. One of the things that I always said was kind of a blessing about Laurent when he first came was that the hatred I felt was more intense than hatred I'd ever felt before in my entire life. And in fact, the hatred was so intense, there was no way that I could just deny it, pretend like it wasn't there. I had to give it my attention, and I had to ask Holy Spirit for help. And I always thought that was such a wonderful thing, because, you know, I was able to then start really getting some great clarity from Holy Spirit. But sometimes that's not as true with, you know, what I would call a mild annoyance or a mild frustration. It's easier to just kind of disregard it without giving it healing attention, or to lie to ourselves about it when it's tiny. So Kathy says she ran into an open microwave door and banged her head. And did that cause some annoyance? Oh, the thought of Laurent. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. And thought of Laurent when that happened. Yeah, because he used to leave the cabinets open. I'd bang my head on them. Yeah. But yeah, Barb says when the pain gets intense, the impetus is stronger. And so we almost have to have a stronger desire for truth. A stronger desire for awakening, a stronger desire to be only love, a stronger desire for complete self-honesty, to pay attention to what I'll call small annoyance or small frustration. It's very, very easy to overlook those things without giving them the healing attention they need. Yeah, we need an intense desire for liberation. So what I noticed here was the annoyance that I hadn't been looking at. That's what happened this day during contemplation. I noticed that when I think I need things a certain way, I get annoyed. And I wasn't looking at that until this day. So this is one of the advantages of contemplation, is it will bring into the light that which maybe wasn't in your awareness before. And again, remember, your awareness is healing. It heals what it looks upon. So it's really good for something to be brought into awareness, into the light. When I think I need things a certain way, what is the most common effect? Annoyance. When I think I need to be perceived in a certain way, what is the most common effect? I take some type of action to try and receive the desired result. One of the things I have noticed in the last 6 months is that I'm not doing that anymore. And I think that in a way, if you look at me with a judgmental mind, it might make me look more, harsh. You know, because if I really feel that I am following, you know, what I am to follow, and let's say you don't like it and you want me to be different, I might say, no, this is just the way it is, right? This is just the way it is. This is what I'm doing. And before, you know, when I really wanted you to like me, I went, what's your point of view? What should, and you know, and some people might think that was actually more spiritual. What's your point of view? Let me hear from you. But actually it was manipulative, not consciously manipulative. It was based on fear. I wanted you to like me. And so now it's much easier for me to just be direct, as long as I do still like to check within myself. That's very important. And I do sometimes make mistakes. I don't want to pretend like I don't. But if I check within myself and I know that this is how I, you know, this is what I am to do or whatever, it's very, very easy for me just to say no to someone now. Say, nope, I'm sorry. I'm not going to change. This is how I'm doing it. And again, I understand it may make me look more uncaring, but it's not true. It's not true. And I think also I used to also sometimes judge some things that other teachers would say as uncaring. And now I kind of see, I see. I understand now where they were coming from, right? Yeah, so, but used to, I would try and take some type of action to achieve the desired result, which would be being perceived in a certain way. And then the next thing, when I think I need a certain experience, what is the most common effect? A feeling of lack. So it probably wasn't peace that I was talking about. It might have been, entertainment. You know, like I want to, you know, go to Italy, and it's not working out, then I can go to Italy, and I would feel a sense of lack, right? Probably some type of entertainment. I want to go hiking, and we aren't going hiking. Nobody else wants to go hiking, and I would feel a sense of lack. That's not true for me anymore either. So that one has also fallen away. So the one that I probably still need to work on is number one, thinking I need things a certain way. That still happens. Sometimes, you know, so that's still something I'm working on. But I would say that, I think 2 and 3 have fallen away. Time will tell, of course. If I am wrong, something will come up to show me differently. You know, and I'm not interested in lying to myself. But it doesn't seem like that I still try to get people to see me a certain way. And it doesn't seem like I want certain experiences or I feel lack. It seems like those things are gone for me now. But that is because, I'm sure, because I brought the awareness to them through this contemplation. That's why 2 out of the 3 may well have fallen away, right? Because of this honest looking. That's the benefit of honest looking. So again, starting at the top, how does the mind suck me in? 1, thinking I need things a certain way. 2, thinking I need to be perceived in a certain way. 3, thinking I need a certain experience. When I think I need things a certain way, what is the most common effect? And I just want you guys to notice the questions I'm asking myself. For those of you who don't yet know how to journal, don't yet know how to look, just kind of notice what I'm doing here. First, I asked what sucks me in, and then I asked, okay, when I get sucked in, how do I feel? So you can see I'm really just examining is what's going on. I'm looking. When I think I need things a certain way, what is the most common effect? Annoyance. When I think I need to be perceived in a certain way, what is the most common effect? I take some type of action to try and receive the desired result. When I think I need a certain experience, what is the most common effect? A feeling of lack. If I don't get it, I feel lack. Who would I be without the thought I need things a certain way? Right? If I did not have that thought at all, if it had never occurred to me that I need things a certain way, who would I be without the thought I need things a certain way? And as I looked at that, the answer that came was just free-flowing, open experience. That's what I would be. I would be free-flowing, open experience. Listen to those words, free, flowing, open experience. If I didn't think things, I needed things a certain way, just a free flowing, open experience with whatever is, right? Very joyous, it sounds like. Who would I be without the thought? Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I'll start over. Who would I be without the thought, I need things a certain way? Free-flowing, open experience. Is there an identity in free-flowing, open experience? If I choose to identify with it, there is an idea of identity. Otherwise, there is just being. And that's interesting, too, looking at that. You all know that the ego can claim anything. So when I ask the question, is there an identity in free-flowing, open experience, what I saw was, you know what, there could be. I could be the one who has free-flowing, open experience. And there could still be identity. So I noticed that even if I let go of needing things a certain way and I experience free-flowing, open experience, I still need to be alert to make sure I don't start claiming that as a new identity, that doesn't become the new way I need things to be in order to be who I have decided I am. So, you know, it's when you really look honestly, you just see how ego can get at you from any direction. But again, we're just bringing all of this into awareness. So if I start having free-flowing, open experience, I need to make sure I don't identify with it, right? Make sure I don't let that trick slip in there. Who would I be without the thought I want to be perceived in a certain way? I don't know, I said. I don't know who I would be without that thought. Like maybe I want to be perceived as caring. I want to be perceived as guided. I want to be perceived as, you know, whatever else. If I let go of wanting to be perceived certain ways, who would I be? And I couldn't come up with an answer. You know, there's no answer there. I don't know who I would be, and that's okay. I wouldn't be the caring person. I wouldn't be the guided person, right? I wouldn't be whatever. And there was just no answer. And one thing I really realized is in any definition, even spiritual definition, there's ego identification with the false self, right? When we cannot say who we are, we really honestly cannot say who we are, that's when we're not identified with any concept. And that's a beautiful thing. So who would I be without the thought, I want to be perceived in a certain way? And the answer is, I don't know. But movement would never come from that idea. It leaves more space for only inspired movement and more space for present being without movement. So I would only act from what I'm going to call current moment spontaneity / integrity. To me, they're the same thing. When I say integrity, that's what I mean, just current moment pure spontaneity, not from ego. So I don't know who I would be, but I do know I wouldn't be manipulating anymore. I wouldn't be doing anything in order to get this outcome of you seeing me a certain way. So any action I took would have more integrity, because I would just be being the way I really feel to be, rather than trying to get something specific out of it. Who would I be without thinking I need a certain experience? Fully satisfied with the present moment as it appears now. If I don't think I need a certain experience to be happy or to be fulfilled, I can just be happy and fulfilled with whatever is. You know, there's no lack. Every moment is great just like it is. Then the next question, is there willingness to let go of interest in these ideas, these three ideas? And the answer, of course, yes. And because the mind will want to forget this clarity, I will review and sit with this journal entry. You know, one thing I've noticed about the mind is the mind, and I'm sure any of you who go deep into contemplation see this also, there's great clarity that comes when we're deep in contemplation, whether it's great clarity in looking at ourselves like this journal entry was, or whether it's just great insight and realization or you know, whatever it is. A great, great willingness, just incredible motivation comes up during contemplation. But when you get up and walk away from contemplation, or at least when I get up and walk away from contemplation, the ego has a way of completely blocking that period out. You know, like let's say I spent 8 to 9 in the morning in contemplation, and you came up to me at 2:30 this in the afternoon and said, "Hey, Regina, did you sit in contemplation this morning?" "Oh, yeah, I did." "Well, anything come up? What'd you see?" I'd be like, "Ah, shit, let me go grab my notebook. I don't remember." That's true. It's as if it never happened. Yeah, it's true. And I don't think I'm the only one that experiences that, right? I mean, it was so deep. It was so profound. It was so clear. And now it's so gone. So one thing that I've learned is equally important is reviewing my contemplation journals. Reviewing them multiple times. And like right now I'm on step 4, and step 4 is a very small step. It seems like you could go through it very, very quickly. But I find myself often going back to the beginning of my journal and rereading it again. And now there's enough in it that I don't really sit with the step 4 journal and read from beginning to end. I'll read some of it and then, you know, on another time read some of it. And so, you know, going back and really reviewing the journal frequently seems very important and most helpful because the ego wants to block it out. And so that's what I'm talking about here. I know I'm having great clarity now. I see three things where I still get sucked in. I have great willingness to bring awareness to these three things so that this can begin to heal or be transcended. But I know that if I don't commit to reading this page in my journal over and over again, I know I'll just forget about it. I know that. So there's also a commitment to read the page over and over again. So what I'm going to do now is just read the entire page from top to bottom without pausing to speak. But if I feel to pause to speak, I suppose I will. So here we go. How does the mind suck me in? Number one, thinking I need things a certain way. Number two, thinking I need to be perceived in a certain way. Number three, thinking I need a certain experience. When I think I need things a certain way, what is the most common effect? Annoyance. When I think I need to be perceived in a certain way, what is the most common effect? I take some type of action to try and receive the desired result. When I think I need a certain experience, what is the most common effect? A feeling of lack. Who would I be without the thought I need things a certain way? Free-flowing, open experience. Is there an identity in free-flowing, open experience? If I choose to identify with it, there is an idea of identity. Otherwise, there is just being. Who would I be without the thought I want to be perceived in a certain way? I don't know. But movement would never come from that idea. It leaves more space for only inspired movement and more space for present being without movement. Who would I be without thinking I need a certain experience? Fully satisfied with the present moment as it appears now. Is there willingness to let go of interest in these ideas? Yes. And because the mind will want to forget this clarity, I will review and sit with this journal entry. So again, just looking, but that's so important, the looking. So what I'm going to do now is go on to 688. It's a little long. We'll see what happens with it. 688 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. All these that constitute the world illusion come into being like a mirage in the desert. This illusion spreads out like waves in the ocean, assuming various names like mind, the faculty of discrimination, the ego sense, the latent tendencies, and the senses. The mind and the ego sense are not in fact two, but one and the same. The distinction is verbal. The mind is the ego sense, and what is known as the ego sense is the mind, or we could also call it thought or thinking. So I'm going to look at my journal entry. Complication comes into spiritual discussion because of the mind's idea of differences, because the mind's idea of differences has complicated things. You can't undo a gross knot with one simple untying motion. However, untying is untying, and it is not as difficult as it appears. Learn not to believe the mind, no matter what story it weaves, and you are doing well. Yeah, that's pretty simple. I want to look back at the quote. 688 said, "All these that constitute the world illusion come into being like a mirage in the desert. All these that constitute the world illusion come into being like a mirage in the desert." So I would say, like, all these ideas, all these opinions, all these values, all these stories, right? All these that constitute the world illusion come into being like a mirage in the desert. And I remember when I was a little kid in Kansas, and we'd be driving down the highway, and you'd see the mirage ahead, and it looked like there was water on the highway, and how much fun it was noticing how it disappeared as we got close. I could entertain myself for, you know, a decent amount of time just watching the mirages appear and disappear, appear and disappear. And of course, you know, maybe when I first started seeing them, I thought that there was water in the road, I would imagine, that my dad taught me about mirage and how it's going to disappear as we get closer to it. And then it was just a fun game watching it disappear. Well, you know, we think our thoughts are real. I mean, we come into this room, of course, and we talk about how they aren't. But we can tell when we think they are real because we give them our attention. That's how you know when you think that it's real, that it's meaningful. Maybe is a good way to say it, that it's meaningful. It's important. I need to think about this. That's when we're forgetting that they are just mirages like the water on a Kansas highway in the summer, right? And so what we want to do is we want to start training ourselves that they are just mere mirages. And it doesn't matter what kind of story it is. All stories are the same. They're just mere mirages. And if we can just play that game with the same attitude that I had as a kid, you know, it was a giggly game. It was fun. You know, oh, look, there's another one. Ha, 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 ha. It went, you know, it disappeared too. And oh, look, here comes another one. Look at that one. That one looks big. Ah, ha, ha, ha. I know. It was just, you know, it was fun. So, you know, we could do that with our mind if we want to. We could watch the story start to rise up and say, oh, look, here comes another one, but no, it's just another mirage. And oh, look, here comes a big one, but no, it's just another mirage. And if we can just learn to just let go of story after story after story, you know, we're doing well. One thing I've noticed about what I'll call points of view is, and it's really kind of funny, you know, if I as a personality have one point of view on an issue, let's say, you know, gun control as an example, and I'm practicing letting go of my point of view, one thing I've noticed is if I'm losing interest, if I'm letting go of what would traditionally be the Regina personality point of view on gun control, I've watched ego start arguing the other side. It's like, okay. Well, if she won't believe that she believes this point of view about gun control, maybe I can get her to believe this point of view about gun control. And it actually switches sides right there in my own head. And I think that's fascinating because what that really shows is those points of views aren't mine. They aren't mine. They are just ego preservation strategies. The ego doesn't care if I am for or against gun control. All the ego cares about is that I'm listening to it. Think about that. That's all that it cares about. So, we are doing well if we learn to just let go of mirage after mirage after mirage, just like going down a Kansas highway, noticing one, noticing the next, but realizing they are all untrue or all meaningless or all that which I do not want to give my attention to. We're doing very well. Again, this says complication comes into spiritual discussion because the mind's idea of differences has complicated things. So, you know, like sometimes I will, and I have to, well, I don't really have to go. I'm up next so I can finish my discussion before I turn the mic over to me. So I'll just finish this and then I'll turn the mic over to me for the next meeting. But, you know, sometimes people will write to me with questions, and sometimes a person will write to me and say, oh, here's my situation. You know, what should I do? And I write, you know, here's something that you can do. And, you know, it's a forgiveness practice. I'm not telling them what to do in form. I'm giving them a way to forgive that thought, a way to look at it and forgive it. And then a week later, they'll write, oh, now today, this is my situation. I say, oh, you know, you forgive that one the same way, too. And I rewrite the formula. And then I'll get another email from the same, oh, now today, this is my situation. Yep, same thing. Here's how you forgive it. And that's what we want to see. The mind wants us to think, I have to let go of this type of situation. There's like one forgiveness practice I have to learn for that kind of a situation. Another forgiveness practice for this. You know, like I have to figure out a new forgiveness practice each time because all these situations are different. It's not true. Or all these false beliefs are different. It's not true. There's only one forgiveness practice that you need to learn. Now, there are a few forgiveness practices to choose from, right? You know, like self-inquiry is a forgiveness practice. For example, you know, there are different types of forgiveness practices, but you don't need a different forgiveness practice for each situation. If you become really skilled with one forgiveness practice, you can use that same forgiveness practice with every situation, every false belief, every emotion. You know, fear doesn't need different forgiveness from guilt, different forgiveness from jealousy, right? The same forgiveness practice each time. So this ego likes to make us think that this is all complicated, but it isn't. And again, the reason you hear about different forgiveness practices isn't because you need different forgiveness practices in different situations. It is because different people, different forgiveness practices come more naturally to different people. So you could say we each have different tools that we can use. Now, Igor says he can switch my ego to another view on gun control. But actually, what I choose to have is just no view on gun control. I choose to remain still. That's my choice, to remain still, period. Yeah, I choose to remain still. Thank you. Thank you, Igor. All right, so let me read 688 again, and then I'll turn the mic over to Regina Dawn Akers. Complication comes into spiritual discussion because the mind's idea of differences has complicated things. You can't undo a gross knot with one simple untying motion. However, untying is untying, and it is not as difficult as it appears. Learn not to believe the mind, no matter what story it weaves, and you are doing well. Learn not to believe the mind, no matter what story it weaves, and you are doing well. So what I will do now is just play a very brief song, kind of just like a transition song, and then we'll come back and have our meeting. This is a little song by Francesca Battistelli called Christmas Is.
Christmas is music and family in town. Christmas is Snoopy and Charlie Brown. It's anticipating that snow's gonna fall and praying for some place to park at the mall. It's mom going crazy cause the turkey got burned. It's saying thanks for some gift you'll return. Christmas is caroling kids at your door. It's paper and ribbon all over the floor.
Christmas is coming, Christmas is near. All I've been counting
before, but Christmas is real, oh so much more. It's good news and hope for the whole world, because Christmas is Jesus. Almost here.